Meeting of the House and Senate Transportation Committee to order. Good afternoon. It's approximately 1:43. I'll say that online is the Juneau, Fairbanks, Eldotna, and Nome LIOs. Representative Hudson is at the Juneau LIO, I understand, and I think Representative Larson is online, on net, but online. So that is the extent of the network. For the record, I would note that legislators, committee members, Representative Menard is present, Representative Gail Phillips, Representative Mulder, committee member, Representative Beasley, Representative Foster, chairman of the House Transportation Committee, Senator Phillips, Senator Little, Senator Lincoln, who is a member of the Senate Transportation Committee, and Representative Mackey, who is also a member of the House Transportation Committee. I believe that's it. The legislators is in attendance here today. The purpose of this meeting is primarily to enable both the House and the Senate Transportation Committees to get an overview of the process that's been ongoing summer and fall, and the large number of public hearings that's resulted in input throughout the state on the highway, new highway airport construction prioritization, and descriptions on the priorities. As I said, the process has been ongoing for quite a while. We have not had a Senate meeting yet to get the overview, and I don't believe the House has specifically on that also. So it's an opportunity for the legislators, two committees, and other legislators to get updated. And the plan is to ask the introduce the commissioner, have him present the overview of whatever staff members he desires, and introduce his staff. And after the overview, we'll take a 5-minute break and then come back, and legislators will be that have questions or further information or clarifications, please feel free to jot those down to ask at that time. And any questions or remarks from legislators before we start?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
As Representative Davis is online at useful.io.
Oh, Representative Davis online. Welcome.
That's Gary Davis.
I'll turn your nameplate over up here. Okay, with that, I introduce Commissioner Campbell and ask that you proceed.
Thank you very much, Senator Sharp and Representative Foster and members of the House and Senate Transportation Committee. It's a pleasure to be here today. This meeting, of course, has been in the wings for quite a while. Both Representative Foster and Senator Sharp and I have discussed this back in midsummer about the desirability of having such a meeting where we could kind of bring you up to speed as to where we are, what we're doing, how things are going, and answer any questions you've got. I have here with me today my three regional directors, the gentleman from the Northern District, Steve Sisk, who I think most of you know, Southeastern District, John Scribner, the Central District, John Horn, and the head of our planning section in headquarters, Mike McKinnon. And John Horn has brought with him his planning director, administrative director, John Tyler, to help him out here. John figured he'd have to be fielding a lot of questions, so he brought a little help there. But One of the things that I think that a lot of people don't understand, and I might just spend just a couple of minutes on it, is the Federal Aid Highway legislation has a lot of requirements in it. And this is the 1991 Act, which we all refer to as ICE-T. Well, it gives the states, Alaska included, some flexibility and allows us to do more things with our money. It is at a price. There's a lot more things that we have to do in order to jump through all the hoops and over all the hurdles. One of the things that we have to do to comply with the federal legislation is we have to prioritize our highway program. Well, let me back up just an inch. To begin with, we've got to have a program. We've got to have a program that makes sense, that has some goal. It just can't be a project here, a project there, a project somewhere else. In order to qualify, it's got to fit into one of your many highway systems that are defined in the Act. On top of that, of course, we have to prioritize our projects in order to be in compliance with the law. The next thing that we have to do, of course, is we have to have, quote, public input. Public input has become almost to the point now where you listen to the man in the street as opposed to the elected representative. The federal requirements are stringent enough now, so apparently what's desired in Washington is that we listen to everybody who wants a say, and even to the extent where we disregard the elected people's, the people who are elected representatives, disregard their wishes. This doesn't seem fair to me, and I'm not very much in favor of it. However, that's where we are right now. And as a result of those federal requirements, what we did is we started in, I believe in July, holding public hearings in just about every nook and cranny of Alaska. We have had hearings with the boroughs, with the municipalities, with villages, ad hoc groups, you name it, we've held a public hearing. My direction to my people were that we're going to take most of our direction to the extent possible from the elected representatives. In other words, if we've got a city council somewhere that says these are our priorities for our areas, that's got to carry more weight with me than just a citizen off the street saying, no, they don't know what they're talking about. We want it this way and that way and the other way. So our number one direction there has been to listen to the people who are elected to represent the citizens of this state, be it a borough assembly, a municipal council, the legislators, whoever it may be. And in the process of this, what we have done in each of our regions is, as a result of these public hearings, we have defined what the people feel, the people of this state feel their wants and needs are. With very rare exception, we have included a very large percentage of the requests of the people in our prioritized projects. Now, this doesn't mean they're all going to be built tomorrow or the next day or next year. But what we've done, what we have accomplished, is we have identified what we consider the majority of the projects that are needed and desired in this state, and we have put them in some kind of priority at this point. How we go to fund them or what year they'll be built, that comes the next step. But this, the first step is to define what do people want and what are the priorities of. This, the list which I'm sure you all have come out with here is our priority list. We've listed projects in terms of number one priorities, number two priorities, three priorities, and four priorities. We might just as well have extended that out and maybe had five or sixes. But at the initial stages of this thing, we decided to use four priorities, and I think now looking back at it in retrospect, it would have probably been better if we'd had five or six priorities, but that's hindsight and not foresight. I think we've worked with pretty near every group, as I've mentioned, and I think that with rare exception, and there are two or three exceptions in here where we goofed, the projects for any particular borough, for instance, that are included in our priority project are included in the order that the borough had them. In other words, we have maintained the priority that the borough had. Well, they may be not as high up in the priority. Of course, I think we all realize that everybody wants all their projects as number one priorities tomorrow. That's not going to happen, and I'm sure we all realize that. But nevertheless, we have kept them in the order that, with rare exception, that they were submitted. And those one or two exceptions where we goofed, we will correct those when we republish this list after this meeting. What we're doing now, of course, is we're holding, I think, our last public hearing here in the next couple of days, and at that point, our public hearing process will be over. at that point in time, we will go back through the list, and we will make any corrections, additions, adjustments we feel that are merited as a result of those public hearings or any input from this group today or anybody else who gets input to us. We will make a final adjustment and come up with what we think is the priority that we should have for this state. I might add this, too. I think that my review of this thing has indicated that the local government people, I think, have a pretty good scald on what their needs are. I look at the priorities as they come in from most of the local government units, and their prioritization is, I think, as I would have had it had I been in their shoes. And I don't think that there's any need in most areas for any adjustment there. What we will do next on this thing, now we will put some fiscal constraints on it. We will look and see, try to figure out how many of what year's projects we can build with what funds are available. I think in a letter that I recently wrote to members of the committee, I explained some of the problems that we have with funding projects at this point in our development process, because we really don't know what any one project is going to cost at this point in time. We've got to go through our wetlands procedure, our Corps of Engineers procedure. We've got to get all the permits. We've got to do all these things that will can have a very major effect on a project's cost. So for me to sit here now and look at this list and tell you, well, Project A is going to cost $2 million, I really don't know that. And if I tell you that, I'm not telling you the truth, and I want to tell you the truth. So what I'm telling you is, if we are not in a position at this point in most of these projects to put anything other than just a wild guess on for cost. The same is true with timing. I think that this group is probably pretty well aware that doing the design and the construction of a project now is the easy part of my job. It's getting all the permits, it's getting all the right-of-way, it's getting clearance from the federal government. All of these things are more difficult, more time-consuming in many instances than the design and the construction of the project. And what's more important, those requirements are not within the state's control. Those requirements hinge on some federal official somewhere making some statement or approving something or passing something on to the next person for approval. And those are things that we cannot control. So while I cannot tell you the cost of a project, if I'm honest with you, neither can I tell you the timing of that project, if I'm honest with you. As the project develops and more happens and we get over some of these hurdles as we get nearer the goalpost, so to speak, at that point and only at that point can we put a firm cost or a reasonably firm cost and a reasonably firm timeline on. So what we will do with this list now is we will break this list down. You'll notice that the number one priorities, I think, are some 208 or 10 or 20 projects in the number one priorities. We will break this down from the knowledge we have now and try to forecast how these projects are going to flow through the number one priorities. Which projects have the least restrictions, require the fewest approvals, and in that respect are most apt to go first. And then we're going to prioritize a second time within that list, not based on need, but based on how fast we think we can get the project ready to go to construction. So that will be our next task here. Eventually, this will end up with a construction program for the summer of 1994. It is not at that point yet, but it will be probably within the next month or 6 weeks. This is kind of a new approach to things. Always before, we have let the fiscal constraints govern us. If we had $150 million available, we selected $150 million and stuck it in the program. At this point, we've got a complete list of what the people of the state of Alaska think they need, and the only thing we're saying is we're going to probably build most all of those projects at some point, but the constraints are going to be controlled. The constraints are, in most cases, things that the DOT cannot control. I really don't know how much detail you want me to go into, Senator Sharp or Representative Foster, or members of the committees. But at this point in time, I'm quite happy with the program. I think that most of the receptions that we've had at the public hearings, again with rare exceptions, has been very responsive. I think the people out there in general feel that they're having very positive input into the program, and indeed they are. And I think that it's a step in the right direction. I don't know how much detail, as I say, you want me to go into on this particular thing. But what we've got now is we've got the first step here for project rankings as we see them for the state. And what this list will do then is this will serve essentially as a long-range program. Based on some very preliminary guesses, there's probably enough projects in here to last for about somewhere between 8 and 10 years of the present level of funding we've got. This is a very, very approximate number because, as I mentioned earlier, we at this time cannot put a firm figure on any of them. And at that, Senator Sharp and Representative Foster, I think that I would just as soon turn it open to questions. I realize that's been a short presentation, but that's really written in a nutshell.
At this time, I'd also say for the record that Senator Kelly joined us several minutes, a few minutes ago.
Senator Kelly, yeah, I apologize for being late. Is the new ferry system tucked into this somewhere? The new ferry?
The new ferry is tucked in, yes.
Okay, because is the plan still that Dennis, that consumes most of the expendable money for the next 3 years?
I think that what we're looking at right now, what we're trying to do, Senator, is we're trying to spread the cost of that to as many fiscal years as we can. The last time I checked with the Federal Highway Administration, they were going to allow us to spread it on to three. And this is an unusual permission from them, because normally when you obligate a project for construction, you have to obligate all the funds at that time. So they are making an exception for us. My recollection is that it's $8 million in the first year. Is that right? Yeah, $8 million in next year.
I'm missing something here. It's an $85 million project.
We'll only need to disperse $8 million cash next year. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Right. Mr. Chairman?
Davis is online.
Oh, go ahead,
Greg. Yeah, this is a Representative Davis. Hold on. Commissioner, what are the federal regulations relating to adding alternates to the projects? I've noticed on almost every project down here on the Sterling Highway, there are some priority needs that adjoin the highway, some community roads that have been in existence a long time, a lot of residents living down there. If a project is projected to cost $9 million and comes in at $7 million, can you utilize the additive alternates for that $2 million?
Probably not. I think our state procurement regulations would require us to go to bid on that if it was any size. If it's a minor accessway or something like that on approach, perhaps. But anything of any substance, I don't think we'd be in compliance with the state purchasing regulations.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure I had that on the record. That was my understanding, and I certainly like to see if there's some way that amount of dollars for a specific project that's earmarked for a specific area might also be able to be retained for that area, even though a project might come in under cost or under estimate, but there still are dollars that are allocated for an area. Thank you for that explanation.
You bet.
Yeah, Representative Phillips, pardon me.
Thank you. I'll defer to Senator Phillips.
Oh, thank you.
Commissioner,
I have three subjects: Skagway Road, Alaska Highway, Taylor.
Okay.
Let's take this. Skagway Road is a. I want to find out what. Have you signed the agreement with the Yukon government on
the Klondike Highway, the one from up to Whitehorse?
Yeah.
Yeah. John, have you signed one yesterday?
No, sir.
It's that close.
Okay. I had a call on that a couple days ago from a constituent.
From who?
I know from a constituent.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
Is that your area?
Yeah. There's one minor hang up on an insurance item, and as soon as that is resolved, that agreement should go forward.
Any time prediction?
I predicted it was going to be done yesterday. But I told Scribner if it wasn't done tomorrow, I was going to have an individual director.
we need to
get that flanged up and get it going, and we're right on top of it. What we've got is we've got two attorneys, one in Yukon, one Alaska, arguing about how the insurance should work.
Yeah.
And you know how that goes.
Well, you got two different jurisdictions there. Alaska Highway, basically from the border to, to Glen Allen, I guess. Can you give us just a brief synopsis?
The Towke Highway?
Yeah, from
the
Towke and then from Towke to Glen Allen.
No, I can't, but I have a man here who can. Steve, okay. Would you like to answer that question?
We have several projects scheduled for those two routes.
We have one that starts right at the border.
Right.
Another one that...
When is that?
Pardon?
When is that at the border?
It's it'll be ready next year or the next year. It should be ready this coming year.
That's the worst section.
That's the worst section. In the meantime, we've found that tourists prefer it to be smooth gravel in lieu of wavy pavement. So we did that as part of it last year. The next piece we have is at the slide on 1268. That will go. And that's all for the Alaska Highway. The rest of it's in pretty good shape. To Tolk.
Right.
And then from the Tolk toward Glen Allen, we have a piece under construction right now, 52 to 65, which has two more seasons to go before it's done.
When you say two more, pardon? Next year and the following year, or this year and next year?
Next year and the following year.
Well, that's not...
Then we have a piece that we've started design on, which is the only narrow piece on that road that interval, 38 to 52, it's in design. We have then the piece from Glen Allen to Kokona Junction is also a design for rehabilitation, which it's got foundation failures, and we're just looking at leveling and repaving. And then on the Glen Highway from Glen Allen west, we have one under construction right now, 118 to 127. It should be done next year. And then we have 127 to 135 that the design is complete on, and we're looking for money for it.
Taylor Highway now.
Governor Hickel was in the Yukon last week and met with Premier Ostachuk, I believe his name is. And they signed several resolutions, one of which was a joint resolution to try to speed up the loop from Whitehorse to Dawson to Boundary to back down to the Alaska Highway at Tetlin Junction in time for the celebration of the centennial of the Gold Rush. That we have a bad piece on that from 0 to 23 mile, which was up in front of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee for approval on in September, and that was not approved. And I understand it's back on the calendar for Friday, I believe.
Wow.
Yes. And I probably will be at, I will be at that meeting and discuss, answer any questions about it.
But
we would like to get that loop going, because I envision that the Gold Rush Centennial is going to put a tremendous amount of tourist traffic into that area.
Yeah, hopefully you'll be there for the budget audit, because there's going to be some questions here.
Okay.
Whatever you say is going to be crucial on the vote.
Whatever
you say is going to be crucial on the vote. In other words, one of the representatives has concern about the money's being used on Taylor. Is that bumping any other projects in the big scheme of things, in the big picture? And he has some concerns, and I've had some questions about that. So I'm just giving you a forewarning of what's going to happen tomorrow on it.
Our obligation,
as you know, I support it, but need six votes to pass.
The obligation limit that we had anticipated for fiscal 1994, was $184 million. Yeah, and those federals came through with $204 million, so we've got money there to cover, additional money to cover those projects that we have in front of LBNA. By the fact that they gave us more obligational authority that we did not inspect and had expected and had not been included in our prognostications.
Representative Phillips, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You were giving up your fully line, right?
Okay. I'm just deferring to my elder.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Commissioner, in your priorities, you have listed the actual road projects, and you have listed enhancement projects, and you have listed safety projects. Priority number one may have a bike trail or a pedestrian pathway that in a lot of people's mind is far below in priorities than a road project in priority number two or priority number three. When you were going around to the communities, did the public understand that the federal funding was broken down into the different categories and that specifically you had to use some for this and some for that? And what did you do to allay the anxieties and the lack of credibility about putting money to a bike path before a necessary road project?
Well, you understand that there are people who ride bikes that don't think that that's, who don't agree with your viewpoint there. But to the best of my knowledge, we explained that in every instance that we could. But that's one of those things that people don't want to hear, and they tend not to listen to it. You say, you've got to spend 10% on enhancement. Oh, yeah, we know, but. And then they see that enhancement project out there, and they say, well, yeah, but you're not building my road project. It's a difficult thing, and it makes it difficult for us because I'm with you. There's money we're spending perhaps on enhancement or on safety that is better spent somewhere else. We were successful, though. One of the things that I might just point out to this committee here is that we just let the first section of Bird to Gird down here on the Seward Highway, and that job came in at about $4 million under what the estimate was. But we were successful on that to get a big hunk of our safety money used on that project because we're relocating to avoid avalanche chutes. The Federal Highway Administration did not want to do this, but we had a good case, and eventually we did it. So there's a case where we are actually building a new road and satisfying a whole bunch of our safety requirements. So that has helped us in the safety area. But the enhancement area, Gail, is tough.
Any other questions or comments?
Yeah, just a few quick points. I wanted to thank your staff. John Horn went out of his way last month during the AFN to get me to come over and hear some of the planning section, some of the ideas of DOT in regard to IST and to rural areas, and I appreciate that very much. Also, Steve Sisk took out his time on a teleconference to give me a real long call and tell me what was happening. I want to thank your staff for doing that. But on behalf of the rural areas, and we do have some rural people here right now, I've always been pretty concerned about the commitment of DOT to some of the small projects in the villages like the Poop Roads, and I'm real tickled and happy that there is still a commitment on your part, Mr. Commissioner, to give us a hand in that regard. Now, we do have a few other things that I understand are test cases within your department, and that's the RS-2477s.
Yes.
I've got one up in the Seward Peninsula of Nome and a Coug Rock Road up to Taylor and Serpentine Springs. I was wondering if there was a time frame on these test cases. Is the federal government, in your view, going to prolong this agony, or do you see something happening in the next few years on this?
So far, the federal government has a perfect track record of prolonging everything they can, and I would be surprised if they didn't adopt that same strategy here, Richard. But the 2477 rights-of-way, the trails rights-of-way, what you're talking about, right now we have, under the Lieutenant Governor's office, actually is where the appropriation was, no, excuse me, it was Natural Resources, is where the appropriation was for, I believe, $750,000. They have put together what I consider excellent staff in Fairbanks, and they are researching all these old trails, and I feel doing an excellent job on it. I spent a day up there going through it, and I was very much impressed. And they are now, at this point, they've selected, I believe, 10 cases that we have gone, started the procedure to notify the federal government that we are claiming the right of way on these 10 areas. What the federal government does or doesn't do remains to be seen, but these are test cases, and as they go, I would suspect the rest of them will go.
Now, I heard a real good presentation from Mike Dalton the other day, and apparently you had instigated this 20 years ago.
1973.
And formulated the list, and then apparently they lost the list or something.
Well, they sent it back, and then we sent it back to them, and they sent it back to us.
Okay, so this is a real long process.
But we sent it to enough places so there was enough record that they got it so that they couldn't sneak out of it.
Okay.
Yeah. But I started that when the Alaska Native Land Claims Act was first passed, and they had the provisions in there for the D2 provisions, if you recall those. I spotted the fact that what was going to happen is, if we weren't careful, is that the federal government was going to usurp Alaska. So we took maps and we listed every trail that had ever been in existence in Alaska that we had a record of on those maps and sent it to the BLM. And I think that was probably, in hindsight, a pretty good move.
Thank you.
I'm next on the list. understanding that the project timeline and dollars for the project are a highly fluid situation, yes, month to month, year to year, depending on what happens along the project. I myself have held back while the process has been going on. I think some local officials have also on. Recommending specific projects for priority consideration. And you alluded earlier in your overview that legislative and local input, now is the time, or will soon be the time on phase two, when the time gets assigned to projects and at least a ballpark dollar, and then we go from there into next year as a budgeting process. So what is your feeling then? Is now the time, or getting close to time, first the end of this month, or when would it be most effective for people like myself and other local officials to suggest specific projects that may not be on the list, or we have a problem on the prioritization and that type of stuff?
At your pleasure. We're going to try to get this finalized in about the next 4 to 6 weeks, so that we've got it pretty well down. But bear in mind, Senator, that a program such as this has got to have flexibility in it, because things change. The priorities are going to change, needs are going to change, somebody's going to build a new Kmart somewhere that we haven't known is going in there. So the one thing that we want to keep in here is flexibility, and we'll listen to you or the people anytime. And if there's sufficient reason to change something or change a priority, we'll do it. But I believe the public hearing in Fairbanks is when?
Monday.
So I would say this Monday, I think that's the last public hearing, is it not? Well, this is the last one everywhere, isn't it? Yeah, the last public hearing will be in Fairbanks Monday. So I would suggest that probably the next couple of days after that public hearing, I would get any input I had into Steve or his people.
Yeah, thank you. I know it is highly fluid, but there is a level of competency in the project on the list, or what people consider a favorable priority listing. And so I encourage people, if we're coming down to that point, now's probably the time not to throw it into a cocked hat, the process. But
I would caution you, follow the normal process. If you're in the northern region, go through the northern people. If you're in the central region, go through the central region. If you're southeastern, go through the southeastern people. Follow the normal process, and I think that's the best way to handle it.
Very good. Senator Lockett.
Thank you. I've got a number of questions, but I wasn't sure how we were going to format this meeting. I understood the commissioner to say that he had all the folks here that was going to be testifying, so I didn't know whether to ask.
They're just here to answer questions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then I've got a whole list of questions that I'll ask, and you can assign it to whoever you wish.
Okay.
First, I had a number of the communities, and when you say go through the normal channels, all of those you listed, I think I'm going to have to go through every single one of your...
Well, are you all three regions, are you?
I'm sure I am. And I've heard again and again that the hearings were not held out in bush communities, that the hearings that were held in the urban areas, unless they went through the teleconferencing, they were not able to tie into it. And in fact, I just got another letter here from Interior Villages saying that they felt that they were left out of the process totally. So I'd like to see a list of where the hearings were held and when they were held. I'd like to hear your response also as to what villages these hearings were held in, what opportunity people had to respond to this. Did all of the villages or communities in Alaska get notice of the intent of the ICE-T? I was really quite disappointed, and I understand that this is a massive project to go through, so I fully appreciate what your department has been doing. But I was rather disappointed when we're constantly talking about water and sewer and the problems that are in rural and bush Alaska. I was taken aback, I guess, that there weren't more projects in here for roads, for solid waste sites, roads for water sites, roads to dumps, especially some of those that the communities that are really in deplorable conditions out there, and realizing we have a need of $1.2 billion and growing, that more was not put into that. So I don't know if you want me to stop.
Why don't we answer the first question first, and then we'll remember what it was. As far as working with the local governments, I think that we wrote to just about, an input from just about every recognized village and city in the state, did we not?
Well, we didn't get to a lot of individual villages for public meetings. We did do a mail out of the package.
Yes.
And we have been in phone contact with individual village community leaders, and we have been working with the AFN, and we'll soon be participating in the tribal council provider, or the tribal providers conference in December. And we're reaching out, knowing that it's very difficult to travel that much in this short of time. We are using organizations to the extent that we can also. Tanla Chiefs, Tlingit Haida, Cook Inlet, other groups.
Could I ask at this time, people will probably be answering questions, move up to the front row.
Yeah, why don't you guys move up to the front row here?
Then maybe, because the people on the teleconference are having difficulty picking up the answers.
One of the things you've got to understand, Senator, is our budget would not allow us to, to conduct a public hearing in every community in the state. There's just no way we've got the money to cover that. What we've tried to do is we've tried to have regional public hearings where we got as close to as many people as we could, and we have corresponded by phone, by fax. I've had some calls from villages, and we have welcomed their input, and I think that through either correspondence or personal phone contact, I think that we have pretty much covered the kaleidoscope. We have certainly tried to.
Well, Commissioner, maybe we can talk more about this, but one of the letters that I just got that's hot off the press here is from Tana and the Chiefs Conference that has 43 villages, and they're very, very upset that they were not a part of the process. I mean, in so much so that they're talking about court action, and you know, I don't think that the state can afford to get into any kind of litigation or to hold up any of this that in other areas as well. So I think we need to do, rather than just, this is a very complicated document, and I think that relying upon somebody else to carry the water, I think we better make sure that the villages are in fact being...
Well, the Tanana Chiefs, there will be a hearing in Fairbanks Monday night, and presumably they will be there because they're located in Fairbanks.
Well, the headquarters is located in Fairbanks, but there are 43 villages that...
Did we contact all 43 villages?
We have responses from many of those villages. We also had a meeting just for the Tanana Chiefs on this subject, and we offered them another one because Will Mayo was sick the day that we had the meeting. So, even though his staff was there, we offered Will to have another one when he was available. We've got some good input from many of those 43 villages, and the time period is still open. I think one thing probably to point out, Bruce, is that book was printed before we started the round of hearings. Since then, we have books of input from as a result of the meetings, and we're getting input every day from people that have attended the meetings or have further read their packages or have had further communication with Tanana Chiefs. Now, I received quite a bit of mail this week from Tanana Chief villages. So I think it's starting to get out, but it takes a while.
Well, I was just concerned about that time, Mr. Chairman, but not to belabor this particular question, maybe we can just go on to the others then on the priority listing.
As far as the next question was the sewer and water roads,
mm-hmm.
We have been working with DEC, Public Health Service, and BIA, and I think that everyone they're ready to go on, we have included, have we not?
That's right.
That was my understanding.
And recognizing that there's more to come, and this is really the first time that federal highway funds have been available for Bush communities, and we have been trying to set the framework for connecting them. And we've used BIA, DEC, and Public Health as a primary contact for dealing with the rural sanitation issue, which is a role that we can play making the connection between the community and the facility.
Okay, perhaps I can get the listing of
sure.
what they came
sure.
up with for that. The other question that I had was, I know that, well, first I have to ask, when you have priority one, two, and so forth, down to four, if you went through all of priority ones, how much money would be left over to continue with twos, threes, and fours, or are you anticipating that you can take care of all of these projects with the money that's available?
I mentioned earlier, of all the projects that we've got on our priority list at this point is probably going to consume somewhere around 10 years of funding.
At
the present level, and we don't know that that level is going to continue.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so with the funding that we know that we have now.
It'll take about 3 or 4 years to get through priorities one.
So, and will we get through priority one with the funding we have now? The funding that we have now assured us with the ICT money?
We only have 1 year of assured funds, and that's the $204 million we've got for 1994. What the obligational ceiling they put on next year, what the federal government puts on next year, we don't know at this time. They could put it on at 140 or 150. So we're speculating on how much money is available. If we have the $204 million available for the next few years, if in fact that's the case, it'll take, what, 3 to 4 years to get through the priority ones?
So we're looking at priority ones. I mean,
yes.
That's what. And the concern that I had was one of the areas that I've talked about is dust control, which is a health problem, a serious, serious health problem in bush communities. Fort Yukon, Aniak, Galena, where there's a high traffic, people walking with scarves over their mouths and children. I mean, this is just a daily routine. But I see that those communities are in priority two, which means we're talking way down the road. And
4 or 5 years, yes.
And I'm just wondering why that wouldn't be in a priority one category when it is a health issue.
Well, I can't answer that question. We'll certainly look at that, and your comments here are, that's one of the reasons we're here, is to get your comments. We'll look at that, and does anybody care to answer that? I don't know the answer.
I might comment that although it's not the final solution, a lot of that can be taken care of through funding of the M&O program to a proper level to allow calcium chloride and other dust pellets to be used. That will take care of some of it. It's not the final answer, I know.
Yeah. We've been going through this for years now, and there just isn't the funding, and this was, the ICT was about the only possibility that we had. I mean,
bear in mind, Senator Lincoln, that this is the first year that federal funds have been available for these village roads. Always before, it's had to be on the system. This ICT is the first year that we've had these funds available. Now, we've got two ways to go. We can use those funds as a capital improvement project in the village, or we can do something, as John suggested, as to enhance maintenance, to do something as a dust pellet out there. And I would be less than candid with you if I told you I could give you an answer to that. What we'll have to do is we'll have to look at each one individually. Some may be one way, some may be another, and we possibly could say some that this is not a high enough priority so that we feel we can use money for it.
Yeah, and that's what my concern is, that with ICT, I mean, this is something that was a quirk that we ended up with the money that we did for ICT, and I'm very much concerned when we talk about 10 years down the road, I really don't think it's going to be there for Alaska. So I want to make sure that the priorities that are here are the true priorities of the communities. Two other, if I
could, I
might
interrupt. Representative Mulder, have a Sean a question. He's got to leave, then I'll come right back to you.
Certainly.
Thank you, Senator. Appreciate that. I also, Commissioner, want to thank John Horn and John Tolley for taking their time the other day to meet with me and talk to me. And at that time, John, one of the issues or questions that we talked about was DeBar Road, which has become a major thoroughfare in Anchorage. And I don't want to dwell on specific projects or open up the whole basket as much as at that time you had indicated that it was not on the top priority, but it was an important project to Anchorage, as all of us pretty much recognize. It's become a real problem. And with the new projects going on in East Anchorage, it's becoming a major arterial. Now I see that with the list, it's actually a priority two project. And what causes me concern is that with the commissioner's reflection that the priority ones are going to be 3 to 4 years away, that if it's a priority two, this road can't last for 3 to 4 years before it needs significant repair. And as Senator Phillips and I and Senator Kelly,
eventually get to our district, but go ahead.
I wouldn't have guessed.
It's a problem road, and I'm just suggesting that it can't wait 3 to 4 years, and there has to be some fluid ability within this whole system because of changing demands and changing needs. As though we have pretty rapid expansion going on in East Anchorage, and it is becoming an arterial. And when we had discussed earlier the fact that it was going to be for 95, we thought perhaps, or
95.
That that wasn't a problem, but if it started to look like 97 or 98, that then it is a big problem. So, Commissioner?
I would make one comment there that's kind of off target a little bit, but bear in mind everybody's project is number one that has to be done right now. But one of the things that we lack in Alaska that I think no other state lacks, every other state, this federal aid highway we're talking about here is just subsidiary to their normal state highway projects. Here in Alaska, we have not, in the recent years, ever appropriated any state money to fund highway projects from state funds. That is always an opportunity, and that's something that can be done. We're talking here about totally a federal... is a minor part of the highway program.
Commissioner, I wasn't attempting to open up the thing to a me too listing about this is my, because it's my project, it's most important. And in fact, that wasn't the case. As I reflected to John, I think he'll tell you that, you know, I don't think it has to be done next year. It is a problem, though, for the future, and I'm suggesting that 4 years down the line, it's going to be too late.
We're going to do the best we can. If you look at some of those, some of the priority ones, and I believe Copper River Highway is still priority number one. Now, the Copper River Highway is X number of $1 million. How many is it? 120 or something like that. If the lawsuit was on there, that project may stay in priority number one, but it may not require any funding for 4 or 5 years. So the cash flow that develops out of this can be quite different than the priority listing. And this is one of these things. We're dealing with so many changeable unknowns here that about the only thing we're sure of is what our priorities are. And that's about the only thing that we can really tell you. And that's what I wanted to establish here. And there are some other projects in there, too, that are in the priority one. In other words, there's something we think should be built, but we may not get to it for 5 or 6 years simply because of the permitting and the wetlands and those kinds of things. So there will be some adjustment in here. And the only thing I can tell you is that we're as aware as you are, everybody here is, of the problems, and we're just going to do the best we can. Sometimes it's going to be great, other times it ain't going to be worth a darn.
Commissioner, this is Bill Hudson. When you get a moment or two, I'd like to ask a couple of questions.
Hudson. Yeah. Got you down.
At this time, we'll go back to Senator Lincoln. After that, I have Representative Mackey, Senator Little, Representative Menard, Foster, and now Hudson. So if I don't have your name on the list,
I don't
believe that.
I don't think this will take too long, but Senator Phillips had mentioned the Taylor Highway, and I had gotten a call from some individuals there that, again, is urging that when we look at building a highway or a road, that we have to look at the whole infrastructure, that not just DOT, but how it's going to impact other things. The concern was, of course, with the that they use the road and they don't mind, as they said, traveling 5-10 miles an hour hunting for game along there. But when you open it up to tourists, then it's a different ball game. And so they're concerned that there's an infrastructure is in place at the time that or throughout the whole planning system. I just came back from a meeting this morning that talked specifically about that, and that was the Alaska Rural Futures Forum. The priority is infrastructure. It doesn't matter what department it is, but it all comes Alaska into other areas. You alluded to the Copper River Highway, and I would certainly be clobbered about the head if I didn't ask about the Copper River Highway and the Whittier Road, which is also in my district.
The Copper River Highway at this point in time, Senator Lincoln, is about where it was when I came on board in April of 93. The Department of Justice has sued the state of Alaska. That lawsuit is plodding forth at its own slow little pace. There has been depositions taken. There's been experts hired in this sort of thing. I understand that it's they're hoping for a trial. Do you know, Steve, is it January as a trial date? Or?
I believe it's later. I heard April.
April? I think it was January, and they delayed it. So I don't know. The real problem we've got there of settling that is in the Department of Justice, only Janet Reno has been confirmed. Her deputy or whatever that person is in charge of civil affairs has not been confirmed by the Senate. And as I understand it, without confirmation by the Senate, these federal officials in those positions, their word doesn't mean anything. They can't commit, is what I'm trying to say. So we've been hoping that they would get someone confirmed by the U.S. Senate for the Reno's assistant for civil affairs, that maybe we could negotiate a settlement. That has not happened at this time, and I don't know what the timing might be. We are not doing anything on the road to speak of outside of what minor maintenance we have to do to preserve what we've got there. Right, Steve?
We're not doing anything. Right?
Anything. Okay. I get the same question. The Otna people and the Chugach people, who are both adjacent landowners to a portion of that road, are very interested in getting that road going. I met in Cordova yesterday with some of the EACs and chatted with them, and they are going through their political network there. They're going to try to put some pressure on the Justice Department in Washington to bring this thing to a head so we can go ahead with it. So the only thing that we've got right now that I'm really aware of is that, one, the lawsuit is plodding ahead slowly. I think that maybe the EACs and the Chugaches and the Otnas and the DOT will get together and try to bring some of their pressure, their political clout, to the Justice Department. That's what we're working on right now.
And Whittier?
Whittier. Whittier, the study is moving onward. John, do you wish to tell them where exactly the Whittier study is? Do you know?
Exactly, I can't tell you, but I can tell you that it's on schedule. It's going well. We're going through the public hearing process. We're looking at an EIS location study to be done somewhere towards the end of 1994. And from that point, we'd proceed into a design phase if a build alternative was selected. The location study looks at many different alternatives. Probably the ones that would be the most feasible if a build alternative were selected would be to either enhance the current shuttle system or to have a joint use tunnel. Some of the other alternatives, new roads, new tunnels, things like that, although they're being looked at, it would be my guess, and it's only speculation at this point, that they would not be as high as those other two that I mentioned.
Thank you.
Plus, you guys have an RPL tomorrow for $81,000, I believe. Whittier?
Say again?
Whittier project. You have an RPL tomorrow and budget audit, about $81,000. I'm trying to reach back down my memory.
It's awful small.
Yeah, it's either $81,000
or $80,000. Is that the rail grant?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's the rail grant, okay.
Yeah. I thought of this update for.
Representative Mackey. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, in regard to the Whittier deal, the House Transportation Committee just recently went down there, and the railroad showed us all the different alternative plans and different things. And it's real obvious they've been working real hard on that project, and it looked pretty exciting for what they have planned down there. Commissioner, if I may, Mr. Chairman, on a personal note, I wanted to offer some thanks on a couple couple things. First of all, the Skagway Road situation, I appreciate you and your staff staying with that, as well as the governor. That is a real difficult road. Randy, I appreciate your interest in that road, too. Not only is it just a road in my district, but it accesses the Yukon. It's the end of the highway and has fairly significant effects for, I think, the state, certainly for my region. I appreciate you staying after that. The problem being that's one of the most expensive, if not the most expensive road in the state to maintain. So in a time of declining revenues, I can appreciate what you were struggling with. Second of all, Commissioner, recently we had a disaster situation on Prince of Wales Island where I'm from. We had all of the major road systems blocked on the island. Again, it's over half of my district population-wise is on that island. Many major slides and just basically shut the island down. The governor signed a disaster relief declaration for the area, but all of that only took 2 days, and John Scribner and his people, John Kiso and other people were really on the ball, and I just wanted to say that publicly, that it was a relief to have that kind of response from your people and from the emergency services people when you have a whole transportation network shut down because of a disaster. I know that should that happen in the peninsula or anywhere else, if they can get that kind of response, certainly you guys are definitely doing your job, and I wanted to thank you for that.
What does that mean, we're going to get more maintenance money in the next budget?
Oh, I didn't, like I said, before, I didn't get your money to come down here and cut the budget, so. We had that discussion before.
Thank you for those comments, John. John did do a good job, and I likewise was very proud of the fast reaction he had.
Also, the you talked about legislator input into projects. I know certainly in a district like mine, and perhaps Senator Lincoln and others, where we have a lot of unorganized borough, unorganized area of the state, it's a little different than perhaps in the Anchorage area or Fairbanks or other place where legislators' districts are confined. Legislator input in my type of a district certainly is very important, because there's other things to factor in when you have 37 communities like I do. A lot of times some communities might get some water and sewer money or road money or other school money or other types of things, and I know we try to see that the communities are getting a little bit. So I think that the broader scheme of how we're putting funding into some of these communities, whether it's roads or other things, really factors into determining priorities for those communities. And I had an opportunity to attend one of the public hearings that John did, and they went through, explained the whole process, and I think that's really a good policy to have, whether you're required to do it by the federal government or not. I think it's real helpful, and those types of hearings were good. I think that leads me up to my question. Thank you for your patience, Mr. Chairman, but I'm usually one of the first to criticize, so I figured I'd be one of the first to offer some thanks. The borough ICE-T plan was scrapped, Commissioner, shortly after you came into office. I know that I don't have any major objections to how you're proceeding with the plan. I think that's not the purpose of my question. I guess I never really have been able to respond to any communities in my district or other communities in the state when they ask, why was that plan abandoned? At one point that became a very popular program with a lot of the larger municipalities, boroughs in the state, and certainly some of us subcommittees were looking at ways to come up and prioritize some of those dollars. Could you maybe just touch on why that borough priority plan was scrapped, and why you weren't able to continue with that program, as it was, it did appear to be quite popular. I know maybe Representative Davis and Soldatna, he and I had an opportunity to discuss this. Maybe he might be able to help me on this particular one, but it's really difficult to be able to explain why. And I'm not suggesting that your plan is a bad one, the one you have came up with, but more for informational purposes.
Well, the borough transportation plan, as it was envisioned, was in effect a formula plan. Each borough was going to get X number of dollars. And I think that one of the things that we've got to recognize is, as you and Senator Lincoln have both pointed out, we've got a heck of a part of Alaska that's the unorganized borough, that has no really formal borough government per se. One of the first things that I looked at when I got into the program and started looking at it, I realized that there were several shortcomings. Number one, you still had, even though it was a borough transportation plan, it was part of ICE-T. And as such, you have to abide by all the federal rules and regulations, or you don't get your money. And the problem with the federal highway monies are that it's a reimbursable basis. You spend it first, and then you go to them and say, okay, now reimburse us for what we spent here. If you haven't jumped through the hoops, they say, no, we're not going to give you the money. So then you're in the position where the only outcome you've got is to go back to the legislature for a supplemental, and hat in hand say we screwed up or somebody screwed up, and therefore we need this money. And it looked to me like, looking over the boroughs that we had, that there were perhaps only two or three of the boroughs that had the staff, the knowledge, and the expertise to go ahead with that program and not get us into trouble. Because bear in mind, if the boroughs or whoever was executing those projects fell on their face, it was the state that would eventually have to answer, because that's who the federal government is responsible. So it didn't appear to me that the infrastructure was in place where we could confidently go out and give every borough in this state, including the unorganized borough, dollars to do things with, and have any assurance at all that we were going to get back from the federals. There was two or three boroughs that could do it, I'm sure could do it, but the rest of them probably not. Also, there were many of the boroughs, especially the unorganized boroughs, that under the Borough Transportation Plan were required to take over the maintenance of this project after it was built. We didn't have, simply didn't have the tax base to come up with the dollars necessary to do the maintenance. So when that all fell out, of course, it would be the state then that would have to go in and do the maintenance because, again, one of the deals of the federal project agreement is that you maintain this facility. And if the locals or the borough or whoever could not maintain it, then we would have to come in and do it. And again, we'd be back to the legislature saying, whoops, we got to have more maintenance money. So I looked at all the downsides of this thing, and I saw there was a good chance that we were going to have a very sizable failure here, a very sizable problem with a lot of dollars. And I figured the best way to handle that at that point in time was for the state Department of Transportation, who did have in place the people who knew the rules and could do the maintenance and whatnot, to pick this whole borough transportation plan up and simply become one big borough, so to speak. What we've tried to do here is in this priority list, every borough we've gone to, I've put in every case, if I'm right, already had their priority list made up. So all we did was just suck their priority list into here. So in effect, their borough transportation plan still exists here.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, my final question, Commissioner, is in regard to a dedicated fund, gas tax. Former Commissioner Turpin had been promoting that program as a way to look at our maintenance and operation needs in the state in the future as our revenues continue to decline. As a member of the Finance Subcommittee for DOT, I'm well aware of the problems that I know your people are facing in all regions dealing with the exorbitant maintenance and operation costs and needs throughout the state, and declining revenues in the future certainly doesn't put us in any better situation. One, the plan that Commissioner Turpin had promoted was a gas tax. I know nobody likes taxes, but people also don't like to not have their roads plowed. A dedicated fund that would be dedicated strictly towards the maintenance and operations of our highways in the future. That I believe that plan had a lot of merit. I wasn't totally sold on it, but what is your position on that, and do you plan on continuing the effort to try to work with the legislature to possibly enact or at least consider such a program?
I don't know if you read the Anchorage Daily News, I think it was yesterday, where it listed the gas tax in the various states, and Alaska is only two states lower than Alaska in gas tax. One of them's Georgia and the other one's Florida. I mean, and our gas tax is 8 cents right now. One of the things that I did look at here, Representative Mackey, was I looked very hard at if we doubled the gas tax, went from 8 cents to 16 cents, what would that do for revenue? And my computation is it's going to produce about $25 million in revenue, additional revenue. $25 million is a long way from funding the maintenance of our highways. We're going to have in the $100 million area for the, well, that's $80 million for highways, $100 million is everything. About $80 million in highways, so we're looking at roughly, it would only produce about a third of the revenue. Now, I don't know whether we can dedicate tire tax or battery tax or something else that would enhance that, but certainly the gas tax is the lion's share of that. So, in effect, even though you did dedicate that, and you can't dedicate without a constitutional change, but even though you did, quote-unquote, dedicate that, we'd still have to be back to the legislature for $55 or $60 million. And if I figure you've got to appropriate out of the general fund anyhow, what good is having a certain portion of it dedicated to? I guess I don't understand what the advantage is. So in answer to your question, I neither favor nor disfavor. If somebody thinks it's going to work, I'll sure go for it. If somebody says, let's stay with the general fund, I'll do that. I don't have any strong feelings one way or the other.
Part of the problem is, Commissioners, that probably 9.5 out of every 10 people in this state don't understand that you can't use federal highway money for maintenance and operation, and that's why you're having to cut your maintenance people, cut back on maintenance and operations is because it's general fund dollars. And, you know, I mean, there has to be a way to raise additional revenues in order to have general fund dollars to step up or at least maintain status quo. our road maintenance programs throughout the state. You know, whether it raises $25 million or $50 million, whatever it raises is going to be more than not raising anything by not doing it. So I'm not promoting the tax. I just was wondering if you have any plans of furthering that type of approach for long term.
I certainly have no objection whatsoever to doubling the gasoline tax. Most of the states now are over 20 cents on the gasoline tax, and we're at 8 cents. I have no problem at all with doubling or even making it 20 cents, because I figure that's consistent with what the nation as a whole is doing. And certainly, you're absolutely right, that gives us another source of funds. The legislature would then be in the position of having the option of doing the same thing they do with the ferry system and the international airports now, where it's not a dedicated fund. In effect, it's treated as if it was a dedicated
program receipts.
Yeah, program receipts, yeah.
Thank you.
I don't have any problem at all with raising the gas tax. I think we should.
Senator Doyle.
Thank you. I, too, want to thank you for the public hearings in our area. I know that your people spend a great deal of time traveling around, and we brought bandages to the meeting so that we could put them back together after everybody tore them apart. And I also appreciate your can-do attitude, and especially on the peninsula, your commitment to make more road with the money that we have. In other words, making roads longer and skinnier instead of shorter and fatter.
Yes.
People on the peninsula are very much in favor of that method of operating. And I am also very concerned about our maintenance funding. I think that's a real key in our area, something that we've been really lacking in the past. And I think your people, Mr. Horn, heard some of the loud cries about maintenance problems that we have on the peninsula. And certainly the prioritization list and accomplishing some of the projects will help alleviate some of the maintenance problems, but they will be ongoing, I think, on the peninsula. One of the most frustrating things during the meetings was hearing people say, wait a minute, we have another list we have to keep track of. So you may not be able to address this, and maybe it's just a condition under which we need to realize we're going to be operating. But do you see this prioritization policy as one that will be long-lasting, one that will be here next year or the next year? Is it something that's going to be around a while? People in the peninsula work really hard, you know, get together, get their community together, get their road on a priority list, and then there's a new list, and their road's not on it, and they have to start the process all over again. So I guess my question is, do you see this as a long-lasting sort of policy?
I think this is not only a priority list, it's an inventory. It's an inventory of the needs for this state. And I would think that this inventory would go on and on. Each year it will be revised somewhat as there are needs advised. I believe Representative Mulder pointed out the fact that there's being more development in East Anchorage than was anticipated, so maybe something has to move. But I think that next year this process is going to be very simple, because next year it will just be adding on whatever new priorities have come up, in other words, what are needed at that time, and changing priorities as conditions have changed. But I envision that this inventory is going to go on for a long ways. The real problem, as I pointed out earlier, in the past has been, is we have put the financial constraint on, so the people, if they didn't make the first list, they had no idea whether they'd ever make another list or not, because we had, let's say, $150 million. If you didn't make the cut on that, you didn't know where you were. You were in no man's land. Here, we've got everything listed. You can say, well, I'm not the number one priority, but I'm down there number three or four or wherever. I won't get it next year or the year after, but maybe in 5 years I'll get it. And I think that having their project in the middle, so to speak, I think is going to make people feel a lot better. I hope it does. And I don't see any reason to change the list outside of changing conditions.
So this list then, as I was understanding, was a required element of the federal funding policy?
The federal ICT Act requires that we prioritize our system projects. I think probably we went a little further than we had to go to comply with the federal law. But But I figured as long as we were doing it, let's get it all up on the table and let's know what we've got, what we're looking at long range. As far as I know, this is the first long range list that's tried to address all the priorities of the state that's ever been put together. And I intend, my theory is that this is a working list from here on out, and the joint changes will be as conditions change.
And I think we're, just another comment, I think we're well on the way to resolving some of the difficulties that we saw with the list as they relate to the Kenai Peninsula Borough. So I'm thankful for your help with that as well.
Well, we goofed on the Kenai Peninsula Borough. Of all the places to goof, that's where we goofed. But, you know, that, one of the things, that's why you hold public hearings, is if you've made a mistake, people bring it to your attention. And they brought it to our attention, and we're in the process of fixing it. So.
Thank you.
Representative Menard.
Thank you very much. One of the issues, and a number of my questions have been answered by, as we went along here, but if I understand it right, we're looking at putting together next year's budget with ICE team monies, and that of around $200 million, $204 million, is that what you're talking about?
$204, is that the number, Mike?
$94.
Yeah.
And those monies will be assigned, obligated to just priority one projects in this list?
I'm sure that's the case. It's possible that a number two priority makes it somewhere, but with the amount we've got in priority one, I would doubt that very much. So as I pointed out earlier, the Copper River Highway, for instance, is going to remain our number one priority, but it may not require any financial monies or any draw for 3 years. So it would make way for something else to actually draw money.
Yeah. So then, for the next 4 to 6 weeks, you're going to be going through it, if I understand it, and coming up with the first cut on how this $204 million is going to be spent in the priority one projects around the state.
That's basically true, although anything that was in number one priority, I would feel would be fair game for funding next year if it got ready soon enough. We've got so many controls there that it's going to be awfully hard for us to come up and say, all right, here's 75 projects that's going to come out next year. I think any one of the projects in the number one priority might possibly make it. We're going to start working on them. We're going to prioritize somewhat within that list ourselves in the order that we start working on them, because we can't start working on everything at once. But it's not impossible that half the projects that we forecast at this point don't make it, and some others do.
Then one follow-up on that. Then for the year after that, you're going to look at, say we have $200 million again. Then you're going to look at priority one projects, and you're going to reshuffle priority twos, could move up to priority ones, and or a different project that possibly is way down or could move way up if there was enough input or enough.
If there was a need, for instance, if somebody started a new Kmart store here somewhere, and we needed
a Walmart.
But we've got to recognize that our ability to forecast is about reasonably, it's only about a year, probably not that in some instances, so we've got to be able to change things as conditions change. But no, I would tend to follow, I would get all the, if it was a perfect world, we'd get all the priority ones out before we put any priority twos out, but as a practical matter, that's probably not going to happen. Probably somewhere in 2 or 3 years, a priority two will beat a priority one somewhere. But you're right, next year we will have to move the priorities up.
Yeah. And just a short, did you say 16 cents would generate $25 million?
I said eight cents would generate.
So 16 cents would generate about $50
million? Yeah, see, we've got 8 cents now. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Foster.
A bunch of real short questions, just for general information. Like a couple years ago, the ICE team monies were about $160 million a year, 165 somewhere around there. And then it went up to like 225, you say 205 or something like that. What do you see as a long-range trend, like 2 or 3 years or 5 years hence? What kind of budgets are we going to have from the federal government to match? Do you see a trend, John? Is it totally unpredictable? We can't plan it for ahead, or it's like a steel six-year plan type of...
Richard, I was just back to the ASTRO meeting in the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials meeting in Detroit, and this is a constant question. the amount of money that is allocated to Alaska is set by law. But then either the executive branch can set the obligational ceiling at somewhat less than the amount that's been appropriated. And that's the game that they've been playing for 20 years. Like our appropriation is what? 225 or 30 million. But they may only let us obligate 150 million of them. So it's just a game that's played each October 31st or October 1, and we never know what's going to happen. I think a lot of it's got to do with how the president and his advisors see the economic situation. I think that's probably the controlling factor.
Okay, now in the small village level, we're going way down to the bottom level here, a lot of them see a little bit of hope also for a little bit of work coming out of the BIA construction funds, but they don't total much. I think last year they're 12 or 13 million, you know, compared to the state. But has there been any cooperative role here between the state to help some of the villages, or is it either one or the other that a village has to go to?
Go ahead, Mike. We met last week with the BIA and are in the process of trying to get a package ready to take to Bruce and to the BIA chief that talks about cooperative funding for rural projects. We think there's some real possibilities there.
One of the things we don't want to do is we don't want to have too much administration in any village. If we've got somebody putting a water tank in, somebody putting a sewer line in, and somebody putting a road in, we want to try to combine that so that it's all under one administration rather than each one of us having a project engineer there. I think that's what you're driving at.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and that's just exactly what we're aware of, and that's what we're trying to do. We do that now. We've done that with Public Health Service on a couple already, and we're going to continue to do that.
Last one here. A little bit on buildings, maybe on the state equipment fleet. The buildings, I know, in a lot of areas, like the airport buildings and some of the smaller communities, are in kind of sad shape. And there's really never been any push by the legislature to help fund DOT toward the maintenance of those or the replacement of some of the older style graders in some of the small communities. I know this has always been an ongoing problem. It's something like the maintenance problem that we've always got. What do you see our role right now, this committee, in giving you a hand to help our people?
Well, we did get a raise in our equipment rental rates going into this next budget year. OMB approved, what was it, an 11% raise, I think it was. So we will be generating a little bit more. And, of course, that will reflect in our maintenance budget because our equipment cost and our maintenance budget will be up 11% to pay for this. We are trying to replace as much as possible with equipment. You're aware of the fact that several years ago there was a big raid made on the working capital fund. I think it was $65 million we had in there. The legislature took out and appropriated for other purposes. That left us in the position of no replacement cash, so we've had to run equipment longer than we anticipated. But at this point in time, I think we're getting back on track. If you promise you won't raid the working capital fund anymore, I think that's solving the problem.
last question here. I about a month or two ago, I appointed Representative Mulder here in the subcommittee to try to resolve some of the trucking inspection issues here between you and the other departments, the public safety, for example. Are you coming to some kind of resolve yet? His due date with me hasn't occurred yet, but I'm just wondering if you've been able to resolve anything with the other departments on your own.
One of the things that we've got right now is we're on the feather edge with some of our federal legislation, because under ICE-T there's 19 sanctions, one of which is vehicle inspection and enforcement. We're kind of on the ragged edge on that. We've got some letters that I'm very concerned about from the federal saying, whoops, you're not getting this job done right. We've been working with the Alaska Trucking Association, Frank Dillon, who's was back here. In fact, I guess he's still back there now. We're doing something on that at this point in time. We'd hope to have this, at least the regulation part of it, flanged up, but we couldn't get a meeting set up with Frank, and I think that we're set up next week. Is that, Frank, or week after?
15th was the last
word. 15th, where we're going to get together and hash out the regulations. As far as the inspections in those areas go, that was of great concern to me personally, because our safety records on our highways have just gone to pot and just downhill. Our accident rates are going up, our severity rates are going up. Part of the problem here is that we don't have enough police officers to get out there and do the day-to-day truck inspection, police inspection, this kind of thing. I got on Commissioner Burton about this, and he says, well, what do you want me to do? Go out and stop a truck with one light or chase a rapist? And, of course, the answer is simple. So one of the things that we've got here that a lot of people don't realize is that the policing of these highways is part of the operational cost, and it's something that we've got to look at as well as the maintenance cost and the capital improvement cost when we enter a highway program. Is that policing and that enforcing of the various regulations is there? It's something that's
testing program of truckers be included in that also, or that's something that's to be implemented, as I understand it?
Yes.
And that's soon?
I can't answer that question. I don't know. I don't know the date. In ICE-T, there are 19 sanctions. In other words, if you don't jump through this hurdle, we're going to take federal monies away from you. The drug one in ICE-T says that if you have a driver that's convicted of a drug offense, you have to pull his license back unless you've got a resolution that says you don't want to do that, isn't that?
And we have the resolution.
And we have the resolution. But that's only interim.
Uh-huh.
They'll change that again.
Okay. What do you see as being the problems for next spring?
I think we need taller trucks.
Is there something that we should be doing right now, this committee or the legislature, soon to keep that from happening next spring?
Is that on the Dalton?
Yeah.
I thought it was. I don't know the answer to that specifically. I don't know where the particular problem was. We address those on an individual basis. You recognize, as everybody does, that we can't have perfect maintenance. We have to take a little maintenance down because perfect maintenance we couldn't afford. So we've got to live with some level less. One of the things, I'm glad you brought this up, one of the things that your group can do that would cut your maintenance bill more than any other thing in the world, you know what that is? Outlaw studded tires. I asked what you could do.
Yeah.
When may I expect that to happen? The price we pay for wear on studded tires on our highways is astronomical. Minnesota, you know, did ban studded tires after they paid the bill for a while, and there's two or three other states that have done the same thing. So it isn't like I'm asking to do something that's impossible. One of the major problems we've got here, Richard, is the fact that in the olden days, before we had lots of money, we used to let ice cake get on the roads in the winter. Well, then the studs wore in the ice cake. Now with this clean highway bit, they're wearing on the asphalt, and these high traffic roads out here, we're going through the asphalt for 2 years.
Could this committee get something on something like what Minnesota's done, or these other states? I mean, what would just give us something to justify an action like that?
Minnesota was a state that was one of the first states to allow studded tires, and they allowed them for several years. And they did a lot of the initial testing back in the late 60s, early 70s as to the wear factors and the safety advantages and whatnot. And then they later banned them, and they are banned in Minnesota now.
Okay, I don't have any.
Richard, I had a major war in my history.
Next on the list is Representative Hudson. Are you still there, Bill?
Yes, I'm still here.
Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Commissioner, we're embarking on a new process, and I want to be the first one to say that I agree that the old process and the legislature's, what it was accomplishing never was what it was accomplishing. That is, we've appropriated over many years under the assumption that these projects were going to be going ahead at some time certain, dollar certain, and I want to try to focus in on the new process here as to whether or not it's going to be any better over time. And also, if the legislature can have some assurances that our local input into the total prioritization is going to be listened to and receive the right kind of credit that locally elected officials can offer to the department. Maybe I'd like to start out, Commissioner, by saying, are the outstanding committed projects, those accounts that we've had, appropriated over many years, being cleaned up? Is that happening now?
You're asking if the projects that were already appropriated and in the mill, are they going ahead? Is that your question?
Yes. I know, for example, that you may have, for example, the ferry terminal out at Auk Bay that
that was appropriated 10 years ago, constructed 5 years ago, and still has outstanding debt on it, which would obviously have to eat into that $204 million. Is there a lot of those outstanding accounts that have to be paid before you can even get into the project once?
Well, theoretically, no, but any time that we have a construction project, we've always got the possibility of a contractor claim or an overrun, which would in effect run into the $204 million we'll have this year. I can't answer your question directly. I don't know how many outstanding projects we have that might have some obligation. I'll see if the regional engineers have any input into that. Anybody want to comment on that?
We don't have any outstanding claims that are
going to
cut into it to any extent at all.
Yeah. I think it would be pretty minor. My reading of it is it would be pretty minor. But yes, if we had to clean up something back there, yes, that would, and it wasn't funded, yes, that would have to come out of the $204 million.
Okay, fine. And then one of the things that I've always felt that the legislature wanted to know as they dealt with the major highway and airport and buildings, particularly highways and airports. And I'm kind of wondering if maybe airports may not follow the same conversion away from the old appropriation, and then we get to them when we can, and then next year the list changes. And you might answer that a little later. But what we always look for, I think, is that that there's a true effort to accomplish what those of us in the legislature believe it in are going to be accomplished. Whether or not, with the great flexibility that you're asking for, probably have a right to ask for, that this may become something that we're pretty much bystanders in, and the administration and whoever might be in there could shift and move them back and forth and pretty much develop their own priorities. Can you give us some assurance that our collective wisdom and oversight through the appropriation process will be honored?
Well, I think that once we establish our priority list, we are going to follow our priority list. Now, as I pointed out earlier here, certainly there's going to be cases where things change where we're going to have to change priorities. Hopefully that would, the legislative representatives would recognize the need for that. I don't see any real big changes. I think some of the areas of distrust that have come here, you hit upon a minute ago when you said that a project wasn't built on the date that you thought it was going to be built for the money that it was going to be built for. But I, going back through, and I've researched back about, what have we researched, 9 years back, pretty much we have held to every project, to every commitment that was made. It may not have been for the right number of dollars, and it may not have been in the year that someone thought it was going to be built, but I think we have not changed the programs meaningful over the last 9 years. And I think primarily what we're talking about here is that it was just unhappiness because it was shifted in time or money. But I think the projects, all of the projects, with rare exception, have ultimately been built. Stand by. Mike has got a comment here.
Representative Hudson, I think one of the things that you point out also, and we have heard across the state from local governments, is we need to do a timely and effective job of reporting on the work that we're doing. We're in a more public process now, and we need to not only collect information from the public, but report back to the public over the course of a year, quarterly or annually, to let them know that the work is being done.
Well, I totally agree that this line of communication, not only with the legislature, Commissioner, but also to our local governments, because as somebody pointed out, they don't know what to tell. I mean, what to tell their local government. So we need to make sure that everybody who is helping to develop the plan is aware of how the plan is pursuing, that is what's going on. And if all of the priority ones are going to take 3 to 4 years, it almost looks like priorities twos, threes, and fours, and fives, and six, whatever else it might be, almost strictly just an inventory list and academic. We're going to be pretty well concentrated on ones for a long period of time. And the big question will be, in the draft projects list that you've given us, Commissioner, everything's a priority one, 200 and some odd priority ones.
Locally, we don't know whether our priority one is in the order that's listed on the draft list here, or whether it moves up to the top for some reason, or things like that. But those are some of the questions that I will have, and I'm pretty confident my colleagues will have, is really, what's the first priority ones? What are the first priority ones that will hit next fiscal year, for example? And I presume that you'll be working on that.
Yes, we will be working on that, and the listing you have there is alphabetical by highway, is it not? It's alphabetical. It's not prioritized within itself. What I've tried to do here is I've tried to get a complete inventory and listing and a priority grouping of what's needed in the state. And that's, as I see my responsibility, is to serve the wants and needs of the people of the state. And I think that's the first thing that I've got to do, is determine what those wants and needs are. What we will do after this meeting here today, and after Steve has his last public hearing in Fairbanks on Monday, is we'll go back and we'll take a second cut at this list now, and we'll make adjustments in it as consistent with input that we've had at these hearings where we deem it appropriate. What we may also do is we may take the priority one listings we've got there, we may shove some of those down into priority two at this time. Please bear in mind that this is just a working list you've got at this point. This is also the first time that we've done this, so we likewise are learning something as we go through the process. But I would think that probably what will happen is probably we will move some of those 208 projects from priority one to priority two, and certainly we will be coming up with what we figure we're going to get out on the street for construction next year, probably in about 4 to 6 weeks.
Thank you very much, and Mr. Chairman, thank you for coming up.
I'd like to comment just one thing further here. The idea of communication with the local governments and the legislatures is something that I'm concerned about. Since I've been in office, I've frequently called legislators and talked to them to see what's on their mind, and I've asked that my regional engineers do the same thing, and I think we've been following through on that. One of the things that maybe we should do is we should put out some kind of a basic progress schedule for the cities and the legislatures. I don't know. Certainly communication is something that I don't think is at the level that it should be at this time.
Thank you very much.